Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 179 for December 27th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
In my mind, if whiskey is distilled from beer, then why not use a really good beer I like to drink? Pilsner, hops and all.
That's Marko Karakasevich, the latest in a long family line of distillers, and he's creating some unusual whiskeys at the family's Charbet Distillery in Northern California. Part two of our series on micro distillers is just ahead. But first, let's look at the news. Not a lot to report on this week because of the holidays, but we did get what may be a sign of problems ahead for the whiskey industry. A report from Her Majesty's Customs and Excise for the first 9 months of the year shows a 3% drop in Scotch whiskey exports. Now, that's the volume of those exports, but the value of those same exports rose by 12.5%, and there is some disagreement on what the figures mean. Alan Gray of the Scotch Whiskey Industry Review told the Scotsman this week that he expects the final quarter of 2008 to show another drop in volume as the global recession takes hold. However, David Williamson of the Scotch Whiskey Association called the figures for the first 9 months encouraging and told the Scotsman it shows people are still buying Scotch and what he calls affordable indulgences. By the way, industry figures show October, November, and December usually account for 40% of annual single malt sales and 30% of blended Scotch sales. Now, if you live in the UK or Northern Ireland and want to lock in a supply of free Scotch for the future, Inverhouse's Annock Single Malt has a competition on its website that you will want to check out. Annock is giving away a full cask of whiskey. That includes a trip to the Knockdoo Distillery in Fife to see your cask being filled, and it also covers all the storage, bottling costs, and duties on the whiskey after it's aged. I've posted a link at the Whiskey Cast website. Again, this contest is only for listeners in the UK and Northern Ireland, unfortunately. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. We'll start the 2009 series of whiskey festivals in a few weeks with Whiskey Live New Delhi on January 17th. The Victoria Whiskey Festival is January 23rd through the 25th in Victoria, British Columbia. And Ewan Shand of Duncan Taylor will be leading master classes on the Viking Line's whiskey cruise out of Stockholm that weekend. Wild Turkey master distiller Jimmy Russell will hold a tasting at Bourbon's Bistro in Louisville on January 26th. The Munich Whiskey Festival is January 30th and February 1st. And don't forget about the attempt to set a world's record for the largest whiskey tasting ever on January 31st in Ghent, Belgium. The calendar of events has events throughout 2009 on five different continents so far. If you have something going on in either South America or Antarctica, I'll be glad to add those to the list, too. You'll find the calendar at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com.
Time now for part two of our series on micro distillers. As I mentioned last time around, John Hansel of Malt Advocate magazine honored the U.S. micro distilling community in November at the Malt Advocate Awards as the Industry Pioneers of the Year. The next issue of Malt Advocate will have a special feature on micro distillers as well. It'll be out in early February. One of those micro distillers is not just a pioneer, but a bit of a maverick. Marko Karakasevich's family left Serbia for California's Napa Valley, but didn't leave the family's distilling heritage behind. And now Marko is producing some unique whiskeys at the Charbet Distillery.
My dad's 12th generation master distiller from Serbia, so since 1751 we've been producing wines and spirits in our family. Mom and dad started Charbet in 1983. And we produced brandies and wines, and later we started making liqueurs, and then I started making fresh-picked fruit-flavored vodka back in 98, actually.
And how did that progress to whiskey?
Ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to make whiskey. And the more and more that I was involved in the whole distillation process and working with mom and dad, it started to all line up for me.
Now, you've done something unusual compared to pretty much every other whiskey out there in terms of taking fully produced beer instead of just brewer's beer.
Yeah, in my mind, if whiskey is distilled from beer, which it is, it's corn, it's wheat, it's rye, it's fermented into a 5, 6, 7% alcohol solution, that's beer. So, in my mind, if whiskey is distilled from beer, then why not use a really good beer I like to drink? Pilsner. Hops and all.
And what did the hops add to the whiskey?
The hops added so much character. It added a fruity, floral spiciness to our whiskey that I haven't seen out there.
Because there's nothing else like it out there, right?
I haven't seen it. I mean, I don't know for sure, but, you know, as far as I know, there's not a whole lot of distilleries. Double copper alembic Charente pot distilling Pilsner beer that you could buy right off the shelf.
What's your beer source?
We had some friends who had a winery and a brewery over in Sonoma, and I took 20,000 gallons of their Pilsner beer, which is 2-row barley and 3 different types of hops. And Dad and I double copper pot distilled it. It took us like 3.5 weeks, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 500 gallons at a time, 8 hours a run, double distilled to produce 1,000 gallons of Charbet whiskey.
This is not a traditional whiskey as, for instance, the Scotch Whiskey Association would describe it, because obviously it's not a Scotch whiskey to begin with, but as whiskey purists would describe it because of the hop flavoring and all that. But it does add a unique flavoring that most whiskeys don't have. Describe that flavor.
Well, hops offer a herbaceousness, a floralness, a fruitiness, and a spiciness unique to themselves. And why not use a fully developed beer to make a fully developed whiskey? Because anything you distill, it gets concentrated. And if whiskey's distilled beer, then that's why I'm using Pilsner. I'm not here to duplicate Scotch. I'm not here to make Kentucky. I'm not here to make Irish. I'm here to make my own style of whiskey. And that's what I love doing.
Have you tried other styles of beer to see what they might produce?
Yes. I have distilled an IPA, India Pale Ale. And it was a trip because I thought that the IPA was going to be more intense in the hops. But in actuality, what happened, when you have Pilsner beer with a lot more bittering hops, those distill out at a higher temperature. That is a temperature that I'm able to collect as a distilled spirit. And the floral, real aromatic top note hops that are for aromatics and cold hopping after fermentation, those actually I couldn't capture. And when I was getting the still up to temp, they were blowing out the still with the CO2 that was in solution, and I couldn't retain them. But I still had plenty of bittering hops available in the beer. It's a super light, like pine, really light spiciness I'm in love with.
So we might see more varieties of this coming down the line?
Oh, yeah. Why not? It's wide open. You know, it's totally exciting. I'm working with a small brewery in Northern California right now to do a custom brew for me. I'm gonna make 100% rye whiskey, small batch, like 15 gallons, test batch.
A rye beer whiskey?
Yeah, a rye beer whiskey. So rye whiskey, but made from an amazing, delicious rye beer that, again, you can buy right off the shelf.
What's the potential here? Are you going to try to, what markets can you send this out to right now, or are you currently selling this in?
The IPA brew is 2 years old, and it's actually my thesis, so to speak, to become master distiller, 13th generation master distiller in my family, because the definition of master distiller in my family since 1751 is the ability to meet or exceed your instructor, your dad. And so I had to do something that my dad's 13 now generations of dads have never done before. And now my dad's laying off that I got to get the label done, I got to get the TTB done, and I've got to get selling it too. It was just like, all right, fine. It's just taking time. It's aging. You know, it's not going bad. It's just, if anything, it's getting softer and smoother and developing more longer chain flavors anyways. And it's an 81 case production. And current, that'll be available in California only, probably by summertime 09.
And the current Charbet production, the second version is available. Where is it available now?
Well, market's available in California, in a little bit in Las Vegas, a little bit in Manhattan and New York. And Charbet.com, our website. We can always direct someone to the closest store if they give us a call or if they send an email to info@charbet.com. And, of course, we'll do our best to get them bottled as fast as possible, one way or another.
Okay, let's try these.
Let's do it.
We're doing release number one now. This was done when?
We distilled this mark in 1999. Distilled 20,000 gallons of the Pilsner beer, and then I put 1,000 gallons into Missouri White Oak Char 3, 18-month air-dried staves, custom-made barrels for us. And I kept it in the brand-new barrel for 2 years. And I have no patience whatsoever, so the day it turned two, I'm like, boop, ready. And I took, I found two barrels out of the 20 barrels that I like, and took it out of the barrel, floated it with a hydrometer, 129.4 proof in the bottle, uncut, unfiltered, straight from the barrel into the bottle, with only 2 years of barrel aging. And the result is, it's not over-oaked. The spice from the hops, the spice from the barrel, the malt, barley flavors all come out. Nothing, I mean, it's not barrel forward like it seems the trend is lately in a lot of whiskey productions. I'm tired of over-oaked whiskeys. I will not make it. If you make a great product, I want to taste the whiskey that's in the barrel. I don't want to be licking the barrel.
So this is two years old in the barrel.
2 years in the barrel. Now it's a 9 year old, so it's been in glass for 7 years, and it's totally aging.
It's still aging. It's still aging.
Oh yeah, I see huge change.
Okay.
Someone who says nothing changes in the bottle is pulling your leg, because we're not getting any younger. If it's -273 Kelvin and no molecules are moving around, yeah, it's frozen in time. But we're talking room temp, and everything ages in time. Wine ages in time, whiskey ages in time. It just might take a longer time for flavor development to happen in the bottle for whiskey versus wine. Who cares? I mean, bottom line is it's changing and progressing.
So what happened to those other 18 barrels?
Well, since we do a dry barrel aging, we're not in caves, we're seeing about 3.7% loss a year, and on a 100-gallon barrel, it's irritating, but you know what, I guess they put it, they gave it a nice term, the angel share, but it's not very nice of the angel if you ask me, man.
It's a very happy angel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so our first release is two barrels, and then the second release mark is five barrels. Now, the release two of Charbet Whiskey, my mom designed this whole package too. And it is 6 years in the barrel, and then I took it out of the barrel 3 years ago and cut it to 110 proof. And put it in a stainless tank and locked it down. So I didn't want any more oak. And I wanted it to mesh at 110 proof. Because anytime you cut something, it's totally disjointed. Because you just change the whole dimension of the whole product. So I just bottled this in February of 08 this year. And it's just amazing. It's something, you know, the Charbet Whiskey 1 is unlike any other whiskey out there. With 3 times more oak, with only 6 years of oak total, the Whiskey 2 is a whiskey that a lot more people can associate with whiskey because there's more oak in it. But it's still not over-oaked. I guarantee you that.
Okay.
Because I told you before, man, I do not like over-oaked anything. I don't like over-oaked Chardonnay all the way up to whiskeys. I can't stand it.
Okay, let's try these then.
Let's do it.
Okay.
This is the Chardonnay 1. And the color on this is a sort of a nice honey gold. The nose. Oh, that is sweet and floral. Getting some dried roses. A little sweetness on there, too. A little bit of coconut, maybe. There's some mangoes, a little bit of coconut.
It's bizarre.
Coconut, banana. Yeah, I'm getting some of that.
Like real green, herbaceous spiciness from the hops.
Getting some green apples.
It's starting to come up. I mean, we just poured it. We just opened it. As it warms up.
Okay, and on the taste. That's intense.
Yeah.
Boy, there's no oak on that. You're right. There's no over-oaking on that one.
No, it's only 2 years of American oak on that.
It's very spicy. You're right on the tropical fruits. The fruits are consistent with the nose on that, which is something I like. I'm getting the dried apples again, or the dried green apples. So I'm getting a little bit of... a nice peppery kick on there, too.
Yeah, nice spice. I mean, that's...
Yeah, cinnamon, a little bit of nutmeg, maybe. Some hazelnut.
It's all over the place.
Now, the spice on that just sort of explodes right up the back of your throat.
Well, we use a copper alambic charente pot still. What all that means is it's a cognac still from France. It's a 660-gallon charge. I only put 550 gallons of beer in there because it's not set up to handle so much CO2.
Right.
Because a copper alambic pot still traditionally is for brandy distilled from wine. So I have to use a lot smaller volume in my still. And charente means that it's a direct fire heated. It's not steam heated. There's no coil inside of it. It's not a steam jacket or anything. It's the real deal. It's the best still in the world to make the best flavor and the best body in a spirit. I'm not after creating and concentrating ethanol.
Get in the tube.
That's going to happen. I want the flavors. And you cannot make whiskey like this with a continuous column still. You cannot make this type of whiskey with a copper pot, with a copper rectification column, you know, to a quick condenser. One run takes me 8 hours to just distill 500 gallons of beer. My secondary pass takes me 14 hours. And the yields, you know, it's not all about yields at all either. I mean, it's the whole difference. It's the whole night and day difference between copper alambic charente pot stills and column stills. And it gives you that body that makes flavors last.
Okay, now we're switching over to Charbet 2. This is the new one. And tell me about this one.
This is the second release of Whiskey 2. It's Whiskey 2 of Charbet. And it was in the barrel for 6 years. And then I took it out of the barrel 3 years ago and cut it to 110 proof, aged it in stainless to let it mesh, and then bottled it this year. So it has six years versus 2 years, so 3 times the amount of oak. But like I said, Mark, it's not over-oaked at all. And it's 110 proof instead of 129.4, so it's even easier to drink.
Now, what I get with this, this is a lot milder than the Charbet 1, but I still get a lot of the intense flavors, but it's a lot more subtle.
Yeah, and then as you taste it, the flavor coats your palate. I mean, it's drinking great these days. See what I mean about a little bit more oak, a little bit more like what a lot of people associate with what whiskey is?
What I get on this one on the taste, I get some, I get a lot of vanilla, I get some black pepper, sort of what I would get with a scotch, but I also get a lot of fruit, and I get a really nice combination. I get some dried figs, I get some apricots, a little bit of green apples, even some plums almost, and maybe just a little bit of dried pears even with this one. It's a very fruity... It's very fruity and yet still very dry.
It's bone dry. I mean, after you swallow it, it's just a real nice dry, almost bitter dry finish.
The Charbet 1 that just sort of had that peppery finish that it sort of exploded up the back of your throat. This one is just nice and subtle, just sort of coats the back of the throat. Just one of those lingering finishes that would go great by the fireplace.
Oh, yeah. In the pool, near the fireplace. Yeah.
On the ski slopes, any place.
Totally, man. A little pocket rocket on the slopes, hell yeah. We see what I mean about the difference between how much oak you use? I mean, Whiskey 1 has so much more spice because those delicate top notes weren't covered up by charred barrels. And if you make something delicious before you put it in the still, before you put it in the still and then before you put it in the spirit in the barrel, why hide it? I mean, if whiskey's distilled from beer, take a beer you like to drink, because if you're distilling junk, you're concentrating junk. And I don't want to do that. I'm stoked about doing it the way I am, you know. I'm here to do my own thing. It's great.
There's a link to the Charbet website at the WhiskeyCast website. And next time, we'll turn things around and talk with some brewers using elements of whiskey making to make their beers. That's coming up on the next episode of WhiskeyCast, which will also be the first one of 2009. I hope it'll be a healthy, safe, and special year for you and your family. That's all for this episode of WhiskeyCast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. You'll find links, the calendar of events, my whiskey ratings, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.